I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 31st. We will talk this hour with one of the attendees of the Mayor's Innovation Project, a group of mayors from around the country meeting in Madison this week. He is the former mayor of Milwaukee and now the president and CEO of the Congress for New Urbanism, John Norquist. The mayors are discussing ideas to make their communities greener and healthier, ideas that could reduce car use, to help beat high gas prices and global warming, and could encourage residents to bike, walk, and buy more local foods. John Norquist says this is a convenient remedy for an inconvenient truth, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why do you say this is a convenient remedy for an inconvenient truth?
Well, you don't have to invent anything new. It's all there right in front of you. For example, just to put it in the context of Madison, University Heights, a neighborhood near the university that was designed by John Nolan, laid out the street design for it, functions very well in terms of energy consumption. It's a very walkable neighborhood. And if you compare that to, say, some of the subdivisions that have been built where there's like one house per acre, which use much more energy, University Heights is a good example for how subdivisions ought to be built. In fact, the subdivision in Middleton that was built not so long ago is modeled after University Heights and performs in a similar way. And so it's a convenient remedy because you don't have to invent anything new, and it's not real painful. Instead of living on a two-acre lot or a one-acre lot, if you live on a neighborhood that's as beautiful and nice as University Heights, that's not a real torture. I mean, it's okay. You don't have to have a giant lot. And if you do that, it's going to help reduce energy. There's going to be about 70 million new households getting a new housing unit, and net new households over the next 30 years. And if that construction is done in a way where energy is consumed more efficiently, then that'll make a huge difference in how well the United States performs.
Yeah, this urbanism or new urbanism is actually old, isn't it?
It is. There's really nothing new about new urbanism except for a few techniques about how to handle parking and so forth. It's just picking up things that were sort of lost in the post-war period. It's kind of like recovering from a stroke. I mean, we knew how to build communities that were beautiful, good to live in, and much more energy efficient, but because gas was so cheap, we got into a lot of bad habits that we have to recover from.
Yeah. Why did cheap gas lead to these bad habits?
Well, it wasn't just the cheap gas. It was sort of also other factors as well, like separate use zoning. If you go to, say, downtown Stoughton, you have a mixed-use community where some of the buildings have apartments above the store. And that sort of thing was considered not modern and not up-to-date back in the mid-part of the 20th century. And so it suddenly became fashionable to have separate-use zoning so that retail had to be with retail and offices had to be alone and houses had to be separate from the rest of everything else. And so you end up with things where trips are longer, and the separate-use zoning is now being repealed gradually across the country. Some places like California are ahead of the rest of the country on that. And now communities in California can adopt mixed-use codes very easily, and so most of them have done it, so that new construction is proceeding more on that older pattern.
Yeah. So is it safe to say that the mayors who are meeting in Madison this week want to adopt this new urbanism, all of them?
Well, a lot of them already have. Mm-hmm. And the great thing for mayors is they find out when they look at this issue is that what they have, their cities, are what they have is a big part of the answer. I mean, usually when you think about global warming or high gas prices, the first thing you hear in the media is about light bulbs or, you know, using energy-efficient light bulbs, insulating power plants, and then new forms of fuel like solar or wind, which are great. Some of them aren't so great, like ethanol, which some people say it takes more energy to create it than it saves. But you hear about all these other, magic fuel cells like hydrogen, where you'll just get fuel from the air and the residue of water. Actually, it's not that simple, and it takes energy to create the hydrogen in the first place. But you hear about all these sort of magic techno solutions when actually a big part of the problem is just how we live. And if we correct it in the future by, for example, Sun Prairie has had several subdivisions built recently that are where the houses are a little closer together. They're built on a grid pattern instead of in cul-de-sacs. That can be a big part of it. Another big part of it is rediscovering transit and learning that that's an option that people can actually experience. If you have a good transit system, instead of paying $4 a gallon, you have the choice of going to work on transit. Like now that I live in Chicago, I take the Red Line to work every day. In four years, I haven't driven a car yet to go to work downtown in Chicago.
We will talk more about that after this weather break. We are talking with the former mayor of Milwaukee, John Norquist, who is the president and CEO of the Congress of New Urbanism, talking about what cities, big and small, can do to improve the health of the world and their residents through better transportation and better planning. Mayors around the country are meeting in Madison this week, doing just that, looking for ways to build cleaner, healthier communities. What do you think? Would you like to live in a community like this? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 31st. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Ben talking about a current issue of the day after 4 o'clock, and then it's his July open line after 5. You're invited to call in with program ideas and guest suggestions after 5 this afternoon. Right now, we are talking with John Norquist. He is president and CEO of the Congress for New Urbanism. He is the former mayor of Milwaukee, John Norquist, taking part in a meeting of national mayors going on in Madison this week. Mayors looking for ways to make their communities cleaner and greener. And one of those ways is through new urbanism. You can beat high gas prices, fight global warming, and build healthier communities through new urbanism, according to John Norquist. And we welcome your questions about this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Are our cities, our communities, the answer to global warming? Recently, this week, Madison Mayor Dave Cheslevich announced plans to investigate building a car light community in Madison or near Madison. And the mayor told a local television station that this would be modeled after a community in Germany.
What people do is they could drive into them to drop things off, but for the most part, they park in ramps on the edge of the neighborhood and then take a tram or they walk into their where they live.
And John Norquist, I wonder if what you think about the concept of car light communities.
Well, there are examples of that in the in Germany, for example. There are cities where driving is discouraged to the point where people only do it when they absolutely have to. I think. You're still in the U.S., you're dealing with issues of free choice and property rights and all those kinds of things, which are cherished in America more than they are in Europe. So it's a question more of creating options than say, in Hamburg, Germany, for example, they have very rigid land controls so that the farmland starts in one spot, and there's nothing but farmland, and then the city starts, and the line is very tight. You look at American cities, and they tend to sprawl out all over the place. But in Europe, they're more used to that sort of thing. I'm not sure we could reach the point where we would have that kind of land use control, but I think what Dave's talking about is creating an option for people. So, yeah, it could happen, and I think it would be very pleasant for people because their environment wouldn't be so overwhelmed with auto exhaust and vehicles everywhere.
Yeah, obviously no one has to move to that neighborhood.
That's right. You have to keep that in mind in the U.S. when you're doing things like this. And, you know, Madison is a city that has tried to follow environmental practices for a long time under several mayors, and I think that's one of the reasons that it has a strong real estate market, and that a lot of people want to live in Madison because there have been efforts made to make the environment strong. And it has the lakes and the state capitol and all kinds of other advantages. But, you know, Milwaukee, which is a city that suffered a lot of decline earlier in the 20th century, after being a very, very wealthy city 100 years ago, is doing much better in terms of the real estate market than some of its suburbs have done recently, because people want to live the urban way of living, where there's less energy expended and they enjoy the amenities of urban life. And so Milwaukee's population now has popped back above 600,000. The downtown has a lot of new housing in it. People enjoy it. When we talk about new urbanism, the reason it was picked as a word, new urbanism, is because back when the Congress for the New Urbanism was formed in 1993, urbanism was still highly stigmatized. And so that was one way to say, well, new urbanism, it's like a new look at urbanism. Even New York City, as recently as 1993, a lot of people were saying, well, the last one, turn out the lights.
Yeah.
Before you leave. But now, urban life is really thriving, and it's not just New York City and San Francisco and places, or Chicago and places like that, but like Des Moines, Iowa has a, you know, warehouse district that people want to be in. Their neighborhoods in the middle of the city are coming back to life. And so people are actually choosing a lifestyle that's more energy efficient. They're not doing it to be environmental heroes or anything. It's because they enjoy life. You know, good restaurants, good way of living.
Yeah, but there are still a number of people that want to be away from all that hustle and bustle and want that house out in the rural suburbs, right?
Yeah, there are, and because there are people that want to live the urban life, there's the possibility for them to do it. I mean, if everybody in Manhattan, there's over 8 million people, I mean, in New York City, if there's over 8 million people there on about 370 square miles, if they all decided they wanted to live in a bungalow on a two-acre lot, they'd be spread out all over the place. They might even move next to you.
Yeah. So how do mayors or community leaders get more of us to get on our bikes and walk rather than use our cars?
Well, I think there's sort of a campaign to persuade people. I mean, riding a bike and walking isn't that unpleasant. A lot of people enjoy doing it. Some people have just gotten out of the habit. In Copenhagen, Denmark, which has a very high quality of life, about 30% of the commuters that go in and out of downtown ride a bike. So people get in the habit of it. They enjoy it. It's very convenient to ride a bicycle in Copenhagen or another place that's like that, Oslo. Norway, its biking facilities are very handy. Transit is, you can actually take the bike on transit. My wife and kids and I were in Oslo last summer, and we rented bikes and took them on the train and enjoyed ourselves a lot. So it's real easy. If you make it convenient for people, then...
How do you make it convenient for people?
Well, you have the facilities, the streets. I mean, if you build... If you look at the roads that were built in, say, rural Dane County recently, you know, the big 72-foot arterials with 20-foot medians and 100-foot clear on each side. It's not a very attractive environment to bike on, and a lot of those streets it's illegal to bike, or, you know, highway, what is the South Bypass in Madison, you're not allowed to walk or bike on it. The DOT in Wisconsin, like a lot of them, but I think Wisconsin especially, focuses their money on building these facilities that are only for cars and trucks. They spend almost all their money. Now they're going to spend several billion dollars building I-94 bigger than it needs to be. It's already six lanes. They want to make it eight lanes. A lot of that money could be spent instead enriching the street network in places like Anago or Kenosha. You could go back to the idea of building avenues and boulevards, streets, instead of always building these giant facilities to try to put all the traffic on one or two roads.
Yeah. Well, you know, there has been debates for as long as I can remember over more light rail or commuter rail. More people are riding the bus, I hear, these days, but we still don't have the light rail and commuter rail options practically anywhere, do we?
No, the light rail ridership in Madison and in Milwaukee is zero. You know why?
Because they're not there.
That's right. Yeah. But if you go to places that have invested in transit, people love it, like the Hiawatha line in Minneapolis. The governor there, Tim Pawlenty, a Republican, was a very, very vigorous opponent of building the light rail line. You know, said it'd be a waste of money and that it should be spent on highways instead. And then once it was built, people loved it so much that now he's a big supporter. He's supporting the next line that they want to build on University Avenue between St. Paul and Minneapolis. I mean, people just are kind of, this is sort of a fear of the unknown. Most of the people that remember streetcars and interurban trains in Wisconsin are not with us anymore. And so one of the things that happens in politics is people conjure up fear, you know, like how we got in the Iraq War, or people conjure up fear to try to win votes. And one of the things, unfortunately, that's happened, particularly in Wisconsin, is the Republican Party has sort of made it part of their banner to wave a bloody flag about transit, like that's inefficient. But, you know, if you look at their what they've accomplished recently, you know, there's been a lot of money wasted in Iraq, mm-hmm. about $8 billion a week. So the idea that, $8 billion every 2 weeks, you know, to talk about how transit might not be quite efficient enough, and then turn around and spend all the money that they want to spend on things like I-94, making it eight lanes instead of six. There's a lot of money available for transit. Mm-hmm. And instead of wasting it on unnecessarily large roads, spend it on transit, spend it on streets.
We will wonder what our listeners think about that after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with John Norquist, President and CEO of the Congress for New Urbanism, former mayor of Milwaukee. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Thursday, July the 31st at 6:36. We are talking with John Norquist, President and CEO of the Congress for New Urbanism, former mayor of Milwaukee. He is going to be in Madison this week as a part of a national mayor's gathering, the Mayor's Innovation Project, Realizing the Promise of Cities, meeting in Madison for mayors from across the country to share ideas on how to build or improve their communities, ways to make their communities cleaner and healthier, sharing ideas for better planning for projects that will help fight global warming, beat high gas prices, get more of us on our bikes and more of us walking, and maybe even more of us eating more local foods. Maybe making more commuter rail and light rail available. Would you want to see more investments in things like light rail and other transit options, maybe more bike paths in your area? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890-263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. What do you want to see your community do to fight global warming and to make your community a better place to live? We welcome your participation in this hour. Again, John Norquist, former mayor of Milwaukee, is now with the Congress of New Urbanism. And how about those Brewers, John Norquist?
Yeah, I still root for the Brewers, and the last 3 days have been pretty grim. My Chicago team is the White Sox. That way, I'm in the American League. I'm not having to choose between the Brewers and Chicago.
Right.
But, you know, one thing I wanted to mention was a really good example of these issues is Lake Mills, Wisconsin. A lot of people are familiar with it. It's about a third of the way between Madison and Milwaukee. And years ago, about 15 years ago or so, the village board in Lake Mills decided they really liked Lake Mills, which is a good way, good attitude for a village board to have. And they said, what do we like about it? And they looked at the beautiful little town square and the blocks and streets and all the houses that were built. That's what they really liked. And then they looked what they really didn't like. And that was sort of the smear of sprawl that's around the outer edges of it, cul-de-sacs, strip malls, that sort of thing. So they tried to redo the code, and it was so hard, because nobody had any memory of how to do that, where you would actually start attaching blocks and streets like the older part of Lake Mills. They just couldn't figure out how to do it first. So they finally, they went through it, they are about to adopt the plan, and then an election came and the board changed and they went back to the old way of doing it, you know, big roads and cul-de-sacs and all that sort of thing. So it kept going. It's really kind of hard to relearn this stuff. And earlier I said it's like recovering from a stroke. But the result, if communities are able to do it, is that you start recreating the things that are really pleasant about small, medium, and large-sized cities.
Yeah.
And you can do it. The rules of urbanism are there. Your zoning code needs to be one that's mixed-use, form-based, instead of based on separating all the uses. And you start building streets that are normal size instead of these streets on steroids that the Wisconsin DOT is always pushing.
Yeah, sometimes I heard fire departments complain they want big streets so they can get through and not little tiny streets.
Well, we're working on a project right now. The chief engineer of the Austin, Texas Fire Department is one of our participants who's working on it, an effort by firefighters and traffic engineers to come together and actually come up with some really good urban alternatives to the kind of big streets idea that has dominated that thinking. The fact is, a street grid in an older neighborhood is actually a good place to conduct emergency vehicle operations because you have redundancy. If you go down one street and you have a problem, you can always come around and come back at it from another by using the block structure. So there's advantages. And the other advantage is that there's a lot of traffic accidents and death when you have a giant road. I mean, traffic death is a function of speed and also alcohol. Those are the two biggest factors. And when you make the roads bigger and bigger, you just encourage more speed and more death. And so firefighters have learned that in a lot of places, and so they're not big advocates for big roads as much as they used to be. They realize it's just as tragic and horrifying to recover dead bodies from a traffic accident as it can be to recover them from a fire. And so you need to have a sensible solution, not try to just make every street so big that you can run, you know, two or three fire trucks abreast down the street.
To the phones we go. Anne in Madison joins us. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Well, I do agree completely with your guest, with Mayor Norquist. I think globalization, which Nader calls corporatization, has killed the small businesses that used to be the hubs of city neighborhoods and the cogs of villages and small towns. And without them, these are the things that people actually do retail shopping in. You mentioned how charming Madison is, and, you know, for various reasons. And when we arrived in the late 70s, it had a lot of green space. You could just get practically anything you wanted in your own neighborhood. I do a lot of walking. But recently, Madison has been feverishly going the wrong way by tearing down all its old houses and even landmarks, all the buildings that gave it character and charm. And Madison does something else that that is not good. They consider mixed use the mixing of heavy industry with residential living. And if you're next to one of these places and it's pouring chlorine gas and hydrogen chloride and aluminum particulate and stuff into the air without filtering it, this is not a place that sells to neighbors. It sells to great big, you know, car companies and maybe even the defense industry. So you're not getting anything by living next to one of these.
Yeah, you'll notice when I'm talking about mixed use, I'm talking about retail, office, and
right, exactly.
And there are some industries that do mix well with neighborhoods, like, you know, crafts and you know, if people are doing things that don't produce loud noises and that sort of thing, you can mix it in. The work-live space has become a popular new entry into the construction industry right now.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, that's a good point, that you really, mixed use could be abused if people wanted to put a loud, noxious use in the middle of a place where people are trying to live.
Well, another trend that I've noticed in Madison, and you can tell me if this is the new urbanism, it's where condominiums and retail are put in a very dense neighborhood or even just a project. That is new urbanism?
Yeah, I mean, there's good ways to do it and bad, but, you know, I'd have to look at an individual project.
Yeah.
Middleton Hills is one that is new urbanism. One of our board members, Andres Nwani, designed it, and it has some retail. It has a 40,000 square foot grocery store, I believe, or maybe it's 30,000 square feet. And that was a little controversial when people were buying into it, and, you know, they knew it was coming, but then some of the residents were thinking, well, maybe we don't want that after all.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a grocery store in a neighborhood, it doesn't have to be built in a way that's that bothers people, and you can restrict the parking. A lot of retailers are learning they don't need as much parking as they used to think they did. Even Walmart, the much very controversial Walmart, they used to insist on 5 car spaces per 1,000 square feet of selling space, and they've relaxed that a lot, and in cities where they've been allowed to go in, they're behaving more like a department store now with not having so much parking. But they have a long way to go. They haven't completely gone green on us or anything like that.
There's certainly this project. I can see how it would be attractive in many ways, where your home is steps away from the grocery store and the mall and
schools. Well, it is
and
right now
and,
down in,
yeah,
you know, downtown Madison, downtown Lake Mills has some buildings where there's apartments above it, and that was built years and years ago, so people, you know, accepted it. Well, that's years ago. But when you do it new, you know, it takes a while for the trees and vegetation to grow and so forth, so it can be a little stark at first, but that's basically what was built in the 1920s.
Right, but what we hear, though, is that maybe we have too many of these condominium housing units in these new developments, and people aren't moving in.
Well, the real estate market, as one of my members said just a few days ago, sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now, there's a lot of, but it, you know, in terms of where the real estate is selling, the more urban real estate is doing really well. Just to take Chicago, for example, neighborhoods like Lincoln Park and that are in the heart of the city, Old Town, those real estate prices have held up really well. The ones that are in places like Barrington Hills or out on the sprawled edges of Chicago, those prices have collapsed. So the energy situation has started to make urban living stronger. And in the long run, if you look at the demographics, these 70 million new households, almost all of that will be more, the demand for it from people is for a more urban product. And so, you know, the era of the 5,000 square foot, four-car garage, two-acre lot house, I think that is really, that's going the way of the Humvee.
We have to check our weather forecast, and then we have more calls for John Norquist after this. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 11 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up, we will welcome in a political scientist from UW-Madison to talk about Wisconsin's role in the presidential race. John McCain coming to Wisconsin today, and a major advertising effort continues from both parties. We'll also wonder what you think of the campaign ads you're seeing so far, coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we are talking with John Norquist. He's the former mayor of Milwaukee. He is now the president and CEO of the Congress of New Urbanism. And we are talking about new urbanism and city living and ways communities can have cleaner, healthier cities. And our next caller is Denny in Ogdensburg. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. A quick comment and a question. 35 years ago, I was on the village council in a small town, Ogdensburg, 230 people. We mandated almost no growth, at least no large industrial growth, so that our citizens would largely go to the communities within 5 or 6 miles of us. And as a result of that, we pay one-third the property taxes. We have smaller homes. We have a very narrow Main Street, which we redid about 10 years ago, paid cash, and we have almost 2 years operating capital in the bank, in the CDs. So we've done a lot of the things that you guys are talking about. Fortunately, I was with people who were thinking about it 35 years ago. My question is, where does the natural step, the Swedish phenomena, which Madison has adopted, Ashland's adopted, Marshfield's adopted, where does that fit in your plan of new urbanization?
What is that again?
It's called the natural step, the Swedish philosophy, which we've adopted in 20 Wisconsin communities to get community involvement in how to grow your community, where you want it to go. All the issues you're talking about, plus looking at alternative energy, wiser use of fossil fuels.
Well, I'm delighted with that. I think it's a really good approach to take, and you know, it's a path that can get you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. You know, the question about industry, which you mentioned, it's great that you have narrow streets and that that's paid off in Wisconsin because of some tax policy that had its reasons 30 years ago or so. For communities, industry isn't as lucrative as it was before that, when inventory and manufacturing equipment were exempted. And so for a lot of communities, an effort was made to not have industry. That's kind of a problem because you need to have it someplace, and there are ways to incorporate industry in a way where it doesn't overwhelm a community. But anyway, what you were talking about, it's really fortunate that you did that, and communities that have benefited from it greatly. Communities that tried to redo themselves to become what was thought of as modern and progressive 50, 60 years ago by widening streets and tearing down old buildings and that sort of thing, they're paying a price for that today.
Yeah. Thank you, Denny. But this natural step concept, is that a part of new urbanism?
Well, it's not a formal part of our approach. I mean, there are all kinds of movements, and there's, you know, hundreds of environmental movements and all kinds of theories about, you know, how economic development proceeds and all that sort of thing. One of the things that we support is growth, economic growth. But, you know, you can do it in a way that actually enhances the environment instead of destroys it. That's one of the main points. And when I talk to business people about it, you know, there's this philosophy that some people push, like Dick Cheney, you know, that if you do things to conserve energy or if you do things that reduce energy consumption, somehow that automatically hurts the economy. The fact is, if you use less energy to produce products and services, you're actually creating productivity, and that's sort of the essence of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And there are Republicans who really understand this. I have a guy on my board, Mike Cruzy, who's chairman of the Transportation Committee in the Texas Legislature, and He used to be a guy who was, you know, pushing highways and laughed at transit and all that sort of thing. Completely turned around about 3-4 years ago and has really embraced these ideas because he thinks they add more value to the economy per unit of energy. I mean, he totally looks at it from a Texas point of view. You know, they're like into oil and gas and all that stuff. But he's saying, you know, why are we shouldn't waste. Let's use it efficiently, and then it'll make the economy wealthier. So he didn't change his general view of the economy. He just changed his method. And, you know, that's the sort of debate that's going on in the Republican Party right now that I think is going to lead to something. The Democrats also have a debate going on that Teamsters Union used to push just unfettered consumption of oil like that was a great thing and laughed at environmentalists and all that sort of thing. But the new leader of the Teamsters, James Hoffa, the son of old Jimmy Hoffa, you know, he's kind of had an epiphany, and he's starting to look at environmentalism as something that's good for truck drivers and other Teamster members going into the future. So both parties are starting to think things through, which is a good thing in America. Occasionally we actually think.
We have an email from Charles in La Crosse. Government has encouraged and even subsidized the use of single-occupant vehicles by allowing large portions of urban land with houses or businesses to be converted to surface parking lots or parking ramps. Often employee or student parking is free, or permits are sold for much less than the cost of providing the parking. Can you, Mayor Norquist, comment on the impact of charging the actual cost of providing parking on commuter driving behavior?
Yes, that's a really good point. In fact, charging for parking can actually make it easier for consumers to have access to parking on the street. Off-street parking, when it's a surface parking lot, is really ugly. Nobody ever went on a vacation to gaze out over a surface parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of the most unpleasant environments. Like, today will be a hot day. You don't want to go stand in the middle of a asphalt parking lot. So there's all kinds of bad stuff about it, but the zoning codes encourage it in many places. And really, you can handle a lot more cars with fewer spaces if you have your meters priced right. It makes the parking that people like to just pull up right in front of a store and be able to get out. But it's hard to do that if all the spaces are taken.
Yeah.
So if you have meters, it helps to turn over the parking spots. And communities that have worked on that, there's a book by a guy named Don Shoup, which has a cover with the picture of the free parking space in the Monopoly game on the cover, the high cost of free parking, and points out how communities can save themselves a lot of money and actually help their retail merchants earn a better living and be able to afford their property taxes if you manage the parking properly and create street opportunities for parking.
On a related note, another thing that Madison Mayor Dave Cheslevich and Dane County Exec Kathleen Falk are promoting are some new incentives to encourage commuters to carpool. If you carpool with three or more people, you'll get discounts on your parking.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because you do need some kind of incentive for carpooling, because people have a tendency to do it when a crisis comes along, like the price of gas is suddenly high. And then, you know, carpooling, sometimes carpooling works, and sometimes, you know, the person that you carpool with has long bouts of verbal diarrhea or something, and then suddenly you don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
You have to have some kind of incentive. People don't just naturally carpool, so having an incentive for it makes sense.
Yeah, and my final question for you comes from Steve in Pulaski. Hi, Steve.
Good morning there, Joy. Real good show. I can only talk quickly, but John Madden there, you know, from the NFL there, coach, and he used to be able to go on Amtrak to all the major football stadiums by train, and the only one he said he could not go to was Lambeau Field up in Green Bay here. And when they have all these special events there, and you see all these people commuting there, and whenever they tried to get something going from, let's say, Green Bay to Chicago, Milwaukee for these games, they always had a little problem. They always run into snags. So I just thought I'd bring that up.
I'm glad you did.
To your state rep and state senator about how instead of wasting money widening I-94 between Milwaukee and the Illinois border, they could use just a little bit of that money and get the track all fixed up and have the train running up to Green Bay again. I wrote it years ago. There was a train to Green Bay. The Northwestern Railway went up there. There's no reason not to have it again, and if people had it, they'd have an option. Instead of paying all that money for gas, they could get on the train. Like right now, I'll give DOT credit for one thing. They've been very supportive of the Amtrak route between Chicago and Milwaukee. There's seven round trips a day. One of the people in my office, Steve Filmanowitz, actually takes that train almost every day to and from Chicago work for Congress for New Urbanism in downtown Chicago. Well, and it's very convenient, and people enjoy it.
We are out of time. I hope you enjoy your time at the mayor's meeting in Madison this week.
I will. I'm looking forward to seeing Dave Shishlevich and all the mayors.
John Norquist, former mayor of Milwaukee, president and CEO of the Congress for New Urbanism. Thanks to Rob Ferret and Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.